Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f- So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
And welcome back to the EPL Roundtable. I'm your host, Kevin DeVries, and as always, if you'd like to reach us at the podcast, you can do so by either tweeting us at EPL Roundtable or emailing us at EPLRoundtable@gmail.com.
Hi, everybody. My name's Thomas Boff. I'm the editor of WolvesBlog.com. You can log on and comment on what's going on with Wolves if that's of any interest to you. You can also get us on Twitter at WolvesBlog or at Facebook.com/WolvesBlog.
Hi, I'm Jake, Newcastle fan. You can get me on Twitter at JakeJack with two N's, and I write for EPL Index.
Hello, my name is Thomas Nygren. I write about Liverpool and a Swedish website called lfcsv.se.
Fantastic. Thanks to all of you guys for coming on today. I wanted to talk about something that happened midweek, which was Manchester United overturning their deficit and then Liverpool beating Bayern Munich away in Germany, for both of them to advance, meaning that this year, all four Premier League clubs have advanced to the quarterfinals. This off the back of last season, when all five, because Chelsea were in there as well, all of them made it to the round of 16. So another round further, all teams make it through both years this year, like I said, to the quarterfinals. Do you guys think that this is the Premier League starting to catch up to the other elite teams in Europe?
I suppose from my perspective, I think it's probably more that the elite teams, the teams that you expect always to be in the semi-finals, as far as your Real Madrid's, your Bayern Munich's, they're at the end of their cycle, which is something that we're talking about on the TV coverage. You know, this Bayern Munich team is at the end of its, you know, its life cycle. Those players are aging. The players that are coming in, of decent quality players, but they're young and they're not the caliber, you know, of players that have been in that team. The same for Real Madrid. You know, there's as well as Ronaldo going, that some of the players who've been carrying that team for a few years are at the end of their sort of, I think, time at the very top and pinnacle of football. So I think it's as much that as the Premier League teams getting better. But yeah, I mean, I think Liverpool and Man City are a lot stronger. Tottenham did superbly well against Dortmund, as I'm sure you'll know, Kev. You know, they've always got that performance in them. And then Man United, you know, they sort of rode the roller coaster a bit. You know, that was a surprising result. Don't think many people saw that one coming. But yeah, I think it's probably more so that the teams, the elite teams, aren't perhaps as strong as they've been, you know, from the other countries as they have been in recent times. And then possibly the Premier League, the top two certainly getting just that little bit stronger.
Yeah, I agree with a lot of that. I think, as Thomas said, a lot of the top teams from across Europe are getting to an end of a cycle. Bayern Munich, Real Madrid in particular, the obvious ones. I also think that with the Premier League, it's just so much money that the top clubs have that they can just spend so much in transfer fees and wages and things like that. Whereas even, you know, the Real Madrid, and you can't, probably even Real Madrid don't have the money that a Man City or a Manchester United have, which it's not. I think it's sort of been quite slow for the Premier League to get to this point in dominating Europe, because it should have come a long time before now, considering the finances available. I think a lot of it has got to do with the coaches that now operate in England. You know, you've got Jurgen Klopp, Pep Guardiola, two of the top, who are seen as two of sort of the top most innovative coaches now managing here. Obviously, Sarri got a lot of praise for what he did at Napoli. He's now managing in England. And even lower down the division, Outside of those top clubs, you have, you know, Nuno at Wolves, who's managed, you know, to a high standard in Portugal, and managed Valencia as well. Obviously, Benitez manages my club, Newcastle. He's won the Champions League and managed at top clubs, and he's managing it, what we are a relegation candidate in England, and we've got a manager that good managing us. So even when the top clubs come up against the lower clubs in the Premier League, there's still those sort of tactical battles and quality of coaching that means that we've probably developed quite a lot tactically over the last couple of years. And I think that's been seen a lot in the way they've been able to manage ties in Europe, and especially I think Liverpool showed that the best out of the four clubs, sort of the way they took a 0-0 but still managed to go away and manage that tie very well. So I think it's a lot of things going on, mainly finances, but I think that tactically the Premier League has come on a lot over the last two or three years, and that's mainly to do with the managers that now operate within the league.
Yeah, I agree with both of you, because the biggest money is in the Premier League now, so it's a natural development that the Premier League teams do well in Europe. And as you said, the best managers also want to come to Premier League, so it makes it harder for teams like Barcelona and Real Madrid to compete with the Premier League teams. It also makes it harder for them to sign players from Premier League, because as a Liverpool supporter, I've been used to selling players to Barcelona over the past years with Suarez and Coutinho and so. And these days, I don't fear that Salah would go to Real Madrid or Barcelona, because Liverpool is a strong team with a lot of money, so it's easier to keep the players in the Premier League. And I think that the same way with Tottenham, who lost many players like Modric and Bale a few years ago. And nowadays, I think they can keep players like Christian Eriksen and Harry Kane in Premier League because of the money and the way that they compete in Europe. It was the same situation about 10, 15 years ago when we played the Champions League finals, and Chelsea played the Champions League finals, and United were at the top. So it's always like that when Real Madrid and Bayern Munich and the teams need to rebuild. And I think that Barcelona is going into that stage when Messi stops scoring goals for them. So maybe it will be harder for the bigger clubs in Europe to get back to the top now because of the money in the Premier League. So if you look at Bayern Munich as an example, they looked really tired against Liverpool, and it's of course not a good sign for them that Frankie Ribéry is a starter in an important game, because it's been a few years since he was at his best. They need to rebuild, and it will be a lot harder for them now that the Premier League teams are so much stronger financially.
Yeah, all very good points there. I'm also curious to know if you guys think that the Premier League catching up with those clubs, whether it be because of their own growth or, as many of you have said now, really the regression of the rest, is it a good thing for the Premier League to have these teams going this deep in the tournament? Or is it just kind of further evidence of the separation that we've seen from kind of that top six from everybody else? Apologies, Thomas.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's good for the Premier League. I mean, you know, it's an endorsement. I think like Jake said, you know, it probably should have happened sooner. You know, there's that sense that there's so much money pouring into the Premier League that it's almost embarrassing that we haven't had the majority of teams, you know, in quarterfinals, semifinals for a lot more of the years. And I think it's probably a positive that, you know, because if the Premier League's dominated by, you know, four to six teams, then the Champions League really has been dominated by two or three teams in the last 10 years, really, hasn't it? I mean, you're looking at Barcelona, Real Madrid, Bayern Munich. I mean, those teams really have constantly, you know, they've had a stranglehold on the competition, really. So I think it's a positive for European competition that those teams are being challenged. Don't think you want to see Real Madrid winning it two, three times on the bounce. So I say it's a positive for the Champions League. I don't really know one way or another if it's a benefit to the Premier League. I suppose I'm always happy to see our teams advance and go further in the competition. And I actually don't think it signals to me anyway that the top four necessarily widening the gap between from them to the rest. I actually think what Jake said is quite sound, that the Premier League is becoming more tactically astute, and I think that flows down beyond the top four or six. I think if you look at a team like Wolves, you know, we've got a very good coach, we've got owners who are willing to put money in, and I think there's a few clubs in that situation who in the coming years could actually bridge that gap, you know, through clever recruitment, investment, good coaching. I actually look at it now and think, actually, yeah, that top four and that top six could actually be challenged, not necessarily by Wolves. I mean, obviously, I've got a bias there, but by any clubs, because, you know, there's so much draw to the Premier League. Lots of clubs can attract top coaches and top players.
Yeah, I'm not sure if it's a good thing for the Premier League or not. I guess if for the brand, it's good. It's only likely to attract a higher caliber of player in the future if our teams are the ones dominating in European competition as well. It's a difficult one. I don't really get too much pleasure out of seeing English teams do well, and it's not that I don't want them to do well. It just doesn't really bother me at all. Doesn't affect me. I think Thomas is right in saying that I don't think that the top six are that far, or at least, you know, impossible for other teams to compete up there, because I think it is possible. And I think Wolves, although he's being slightly trying not to be too biased, I think Wolves are the ones best placed to do that, given the structure they've got in place, owner wise and on the coaching staff, and the money that's available means that they're probably the best place to compete. And even, you know, in their first season in the Premier League, they're beating beating those top six teams, and I haven't seen a game yet where they haven't really competed in against those top six teams. So I think they're definitely the ones. But yeah, I think it's a good thing on the whole. But yeah, for me as a Newcastle fan, I don't really see much of a not really too bothered. I think there was a point where there was a coefficient sort of interest for even those clubs sort of in the lower half of the league, where we might have lost the Europa League spot or something, but I think that's now impossible due to the changes in the rules regarding that. So yeah, I guess it's good, but I think if anything, the Premier League's growth is going to jeopardise, you know, the league in itself, because I think these top European clubs want a bit of that money. And whether that means the Champions League is going to move on to Saturdays, which I think has been touted, or if there's going to be a European Super League at some point, I think they're the more likely results of Premier League clubs dominating in Europe than any sort of benefit to the Premier League in the long term, especially the clubs that aren't in those top six.
Yeah, I think that the success in Europe will make the league even more interesting for big players and big managers. And if the teams behind the top six that we have right now makes the right recruitments, maybe this is the chance for them to compete with the top teams. But of course, if the money gets bigger for the top names, maybe it will be harder for teams like Wolves and Leicester and so to fight for the European spot. But the quality of the league will be better. But I fear that the gap between us in the top and the teams behind will be even bigger, because if you look at this season, we've lost one game, and I'm used to be nervous for every game when Liverpool play, and now when we play the team from the bottom half away, I almost expect us to win, and that's something new to me. Maybe it's because Liverpool have a really good season, but I fear that the gap between the teams at the top and the teams at the bottom will grow. But on the other hand, the money is there's already big money in the Premier League, and you see the teams at the bottom signing players that the top teams in Italy almost can't do. So, with the right recruitment, it isn't necessarily something bad that the Premier League teams go far in Europe. But I fear that maybe in the season coming up, we will see Liverpool, City, United, Chelsea, they will drop points against each other and win against the team behind them. And that takes away a bit of the excitement, because these weeks I watch Manchester City every week and hope they will lose points, but I'm almost sure that they won't, because the gap between them and the teams at the bottom half is too big. And if the money keeps coming, I fear that the gap might grow.
Yeah, it'll definitely be interesting to see, especially Jake's thing about the Super League. The only reason why I think that that is bound to not happen is how would some of these super clubs take to losing far more regularly instead of just being able to kind of be the big fish in smaller ponds. But, that might be the eventual effect of this. But for now, I think it is probably a net positive for the Premier League, but it's easy to see why fans of clubs outside of that top six don't really see the benefit to it other than just the clout of the league being improved. All right, next up, we'll talk a little FA Cup since, the weekend was split between Premier League and FA Cup. The show may as well be as well. It is worth noting that this question was written when Millwall were 2-0 up with, 10 minutes left, I think. what do you guys think was the most surprising FA Cup result this weekend?
Well, it wasn't Man City beating Swansea. I think we can safely chalk that one up. Although, I suppose at 2-0 down at half-time, you could say that was the most, and that could have been one of the more unlikely results, although most people probably still thought they'd win. I don't think it was Watford beating Palace, and I don't think it was probably Brighton beating Millwall in a penalty shootout, even though they were 2-0 down. So I think, unfortunately, the most surprising result is probably Wolves beating Man United. But for me, it wasn't a massive surprise, and I don't think really it should be considered a huge surprise. I mean, I know that sounds really painfully arrogant to say that.
As neutrals, I mean, you've picked up some pretty big scalps this season.
Yeah, we have. And you know what? I mean, I put in my preview. You can log on to my blog and you can see the preview I wrote for the match. And I said, we've got a chance in this game and not a kind of, if Man United don't turn up, we could scrape the win. I thought we've just got a chance of outplaying them. And actually, I think on the balance of the game, we outplayed them. I think for the first 20, 30 minutes, they did what the top sides do. They rotated the ball quickly and they looked quite sharp, and we were struggling to get a foothold in the game. But that changed, you know. And in the second half, we took control of that game and we took our chances and deservedly came out on top. So to answer your question, I don't think there was any shocks in the FA Cup this weekend, but I think if you're looking for one, it was probably Wolves beating Man United.
Yeah, I agree. I don't really think that was that big of a shock considering some of the results that the Wolves have had this season, even previously in the FA Cup. You know, knocking out Liverpool, I think that's a bigger shock than knocking out United, who, They are making progress under Solskjaer, but I still don't think they're one of the very, you know, top two or three teams in this country. They're still very fallible, and I think they've had a lot of luck to go alongside the good football that has been played, especially in that PSG game. There's quite a lot of luck, and I think it's, you know, sometimes teams go on these runs and this might be a wake-up call for them, you know, showing them that they've still got a long way to go before they become that top force that they want to be again. But yeah, I don't think it was that big of a shock. Even though they didn't win, you could say Swansea going 2-0 up against Man City, you know, losing 3-2 was a bit of a shock. Even if the result wasn't a shock, the phase of the game was quite a shock. And just a question that I had off the top of that game that I thought was interesting, in the FA Cup, there wasn't VAR in that game at Swansea. Yeah, it was available at the Wolves game. Do you know the rest of you think that's fair, that in the same competition that there's technology available at one ground at the same round of the competition and not another? Because I thought it's quite questionable, because I think you could maybe, you know, go far to say that if it was available, the penalty might not have been given. I thought that was debatable. Maybe not a clear and obvious error, but wasn't the clearest penalty for me. And then following that, you know, you had the goal at the end, which probably should have been disallowed for offside. So if VAR was available, we might have had a different result, and that we may have had that big shock that we did like to discuss right now that we don't really have to discuss.
I very much appreciate you, Jake, for pivoting that question. And I will also add that in the discussion of should VAR be at every stadium, VAR was in place at the Liberty Stadium last season when they played Tottenham. So it's fully capable of doing it. I spoke with Gitto after that match because we were hoping he'd be able to come on. And he was saying that the reasoning that they heard was that because Swansea isn't a Premier League ground, that's why they did not have VAR there.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a foot. You can look at it one of two ways. I think one way to look at it would be, well, whether it's there or not, it's the same for both teams. So, you know, if it just so happened that Man City were pressing and they forced those decisions and they had the benefit of the doubt, you know, it's the same for both teams. It's not like Man City had VAR and Swansea didn't. So you could say, well, there's no, you know, you kick off with the same set of rules. That's the way it is. But it's an interesting question in terms of why have it at some grounds and not at others. Definitely. It seems a very strange way of implementing it into a competition. And I think it probably tells you about how much the FA Cup is valued generally, because I don't see them in the Premier League next season saying, oh yeah, we'll put it in the top four. You know, the top six teams at home can have it, and then everyone else we won't have it. You know, there's not a gradual rollout. So it probably tells you more about the competition than the you know, anything else.
Yeah, I agree. Of course, it's the game starts the same for both teams, but the ideal way was to have it at every arena. And I think that the VAR question is quite important for English football and Premier League for the next season, because we've seen many referees making mistakes in the past weeks. And I'm not sure that VAR will save them from making mistakes, but something needs to be done, because it starts to get a bit annoying to see those decisions week in and week out. And the discussions about football isn't as common as it should be, because we always have referee discussions after the game. And I don't like that. But if you look at the FA Cup results this weekend, I agree with you both. It wasn't many surprising results. Of course, if City had lost, it would have been the big one. I couldn't watch that game, but from what I've heard, they were quite lucky with the referee. And in the end, they did enough to win. Of course, it would have been fun to see Swansea go through, and especially since their Swedish goalkeeper, Kristoffer Nordfeldt, got a rare start, and I heard that he did well. But it's good news for Liverpool that City get to play even more games, so hopefully that will make them even more tired physically and mentally and drop some points in the league. I was not surprised at all that Wolves knocked United out. I think Manchester United have overachieved with Solskjaer. Even though they have won many games, they haven't impressed too much in the way that they played. And they were extremely lucky against PSG. And I think they've been lucky in a few games in the league as well. So I think we'll see them lose more games in the upcoming weeks. And Wolves is a very good team. They knocked us out, and now they did the same thing against Manchester United. To lose away against Wolves isn't strange at all. They have been beating top teams many times this season, and I think that the cup is a chance for them to win the title, so that they are motivated and beat Manchester United. It was no surprise at all. The way that Brighton fought back today was maybe the most surprising thing during this FA Cup weekend. So results-wise, I don't think there was any surprises at all.
Hmm. So it turns out it was a pretty bad question. I do agree with you guys that Swansea, in that like 10 to 15 minute spell, especially that second goal that they scored, was just a fantastic, fantastic goal. I mean, you don't see many clubs pulling City apart like that. Maybe a small part of it would be them over or underestimating their opposition. But that was fantastic. But on the VAR stuff, agreed. It should just be everywhere. And we'll continue to see it implemented. And people will continue to be frustrated by it. And we'll get on to one of those decisions when we get to Thomas. We tend to try to not address individual issues at the top of the show here. But it certainly went to show that there will still be plenty of debate even when VAR is implemented. And that a lot of people are not seeing the rules the same way, and that certainly will not change when VAR is implemented either. All right, we will take a quick break, and then we'll be back with club-specific questions for each of our guests. Well, that wasn't too long, Thomas, because we're going to start with you, and we'll kind of walk through that match, if you don't mind, from the beginning to end, and then afterwards, we'll try to get into this yellow or red turned yellow situation that seemed to cause a bit of a uproar at the time. Yeah, so Thomas, just walk us through what was another big win for Wolves this season.
Well, I think I kind of touched on it in my previous reply. You know, we went into the game, I felt, with a very good chance of coming out with the win. We've got a very specific way of setting up and frustrating teams. We did it at Stamford Bridge last week, where Chelsea just never looked like they were going to get through us until Hazard just produced a moment of magic. They caught us a bit cold with a short corner, and he did it. But you look at that Man United team, and I think it was a bonus before the game started to hear that Lukaku wasn't playing, because I thought that meant that they would probably go with Rashford and Martial, who were, you know, undoubtedly very talented players, but they're hit and miss players. They could have two or three bad games, and they can be ineffective. And I just thought without a proper centre forward, that Man United would probably have similar problems to Chelsea in getting through our defence and midfield screen. And that's how it proved. You know, they had some good combination play in the early parts of the game, but they didn't really penetrate or get through, just some long range shots. And I think in the second half, you saw Wolves' confidence grow. They got on the ball more in Man United's half. Moutinho got into the game. And when he gets into the game, he brings the forward players into the game. And from there, everything just builds. And it was just a typical Wolves performance. You know, Jimenez produced a smart finish for the goal. And then it was counter-attacking football. And Jota did what he's been doing phenomenally well over the second half of the season.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Since he's moved up front alongside Jimenez, and that's breaking, and it's, you know, it's a fantastic goal and a fantastic win for Wolves. There's not much to say really. I mean, thankfully the VAR decision, the sending off, was kind of a trivial thing in the end, because it didn't really make any difference that they kept 10 men on the pitch. They got a consolation goal, obviously, but there was barely time to kick off by that point. Just a fairly unerringly kind of routine win, really.
Yeah, then there was a significant incident towards the end. Lindelof gets shown the red card by the referee. Then it goes to VAR. It's reduced to yellow. Jake referenced earlier that he didn't know if the City penalty was a clear error by the referee. Same kind of thing here. I was a little surprised to see that overturn. What was your thought of it at the time?
Well, sat in the stands, I thought definite red card, because you can see, okay, he comes through and takes the ball, but he goes through the player to take the ball out, and the challenge seems quite high to me. I don't think it's a malicious challenge. I just think it's a very reckless challenge. So you're looking for, there's two things he could be sent off for: a reckless challenge and excessive force. And you know, I felt both of those things were definitely, you know, he was worthy of it, that challenge. And I don't think, as you point out, it's not a definite mistake. I'm just surprised that, you know, he was happy to overturn it. And yeah, I mean, I suppose I've seen it back, and I don't really, my view hasn't changed. I think it was a clumsy tackle. I think it was a bit of a nasty tackle. So yeah, but it's, you know, these things are about opinions. I mean, you're probably better off asking the other two guys if they've seen the tackle and what they think of it. But I am surprised, as you say, Kev, that they overturned it, because it didn't look like a clear mistake.
The other thing I want to talk to you that's been prevalent in this FA Cup run has been the rotation of goalkeepers. Do you think that that's something that you'd like to see stuck with, or at a certain point, do you just wish Patricio would stay in?
I think John Ruddy's a capable goalkeeper. And I just think it's a natural thing. Man United have been doing it, obviously. They had Romero in goal last night. He made some fantastic saves. He's been very good for them throughout the cup competition. Okay, probably got beaten a bit easily for that second goal for Wolves, but I think it's just part and parcel of the FA Cup, isn't it? I mean, we were doing what every team does, Premier League team, in the early rounds against Shrewsbury, and we rotated our team round. That's just the nature of the competition, isn't it? And if you're going to have a goalie sat on your bench, it's tough, isn't it, that you're not going to give him any minutes whatsoever. I don't think he will bring Patricio back in now. I mean, a point that's worth making is that Nuno himself was a goalkeeper. And he was a reserve goalkeeper for much of his career. So I think he understands that position better than a lot of people. But I don't think we'll see Patricio back in goal for the semi-final and indeed the final if we make it. And I don't think there's such a chasm in ability between our two goalkeepers that I would be worried about it. So not really an issue for me.
Gotcha. All right, Jake, coming to you now to talk a little bit about Newcastle. You had a very interesting match against Bournemouth there. A lot of heavy challenges in the first half as well, but you do manage to pull out a draw. Considering your home form, is it pretty much just any away points at this point in the season will just further ensure your safety?
I don't know if that's the attitude to take. I think we need to go into every game trying to win it. And I think Benitez's comments after the game sort of showed that he was quite angry about some of the decisions that the referee made. And you know, I think he asked, is it 1 point gained? And he thought it was 2 points dropped. And I'd probably have to agree on that. I thought we were the better team and we probably should have managed the game a little bit better. And if Mike Dean doesn't give the penalty, which, you know, it's one of those where you can make a case for it being a penalty, but you could also make a case of if that's a penalty, you're going to be given 10 a game. So it's one of those that you get sometimes, especially if you're a big club or if you're at home, they're the type of penalties you get. And it was just unfortunate that it happened at the time when it did. I think we could have had a penalty ourselves for a tackle on Yedlin where the ball had already gone, admittedly. But if it was anywhere else on the pitch, you'd have got a foul. So, yeah, I think it was what we didn't get decisions. And to get a point late on like we did is a positive one, and obviously any away point is got to seem to be positive, especially when you're where we are in the league. But you know, I think we've got a manager that looks at matches in a different way to both clubs at the bottom of the league, and he'll be wanting to win as many as possible. And I think that was one we could have won, and maybe should have won if things had gone our way a little bit more. But yeah, it didn't. But yeah, it's still a good point, and it maintains our positive momentum going into the final 9 games. Is it 7? You know, how many games we've got left? I think it's 7 or 8. It's not many. But yeah, it keeps us, you know, going in the right direction. And last year we finished the season strongly, and I fully expect us to do similar this year.
Mm. Also, we haven't had you on since the Longstaff injury. Obviously, he was coming through, playing very well. Did manage to get a goal to his name before then, but sounds like he'll be out for the rest of the season. I know Key played for him that first week after the injury. Do you think that that's the best solution for the rest of the season? Would you like to see Mo Diame get more minutes? Where do you think you should go there in that midfield spot?
It's disappointing that Longstaff got injured when he did. Obviously, done very well up to that point, and was looking like a really, really good player and one that could nail down a spot in the team. And I fully expected to do that in future years. But if there was any position where we're well covered, it is that one. You know, we've had Key come in, we've had Diame play. Hayden's obviously doing very well. And we got Jonjo Shelvey slowly coming back in. And I think it's Shelvey that I'd quite like to see play there going forwards, just because he just offers so much more than the rest of them in possession. And he's just, yeah, when he's on his game, he's very good to watch. And I think Hayden is a little bit more of a disciplined midfielder who can sit there and do a lot of the defensive work, so it suits quite well with Shelvin. It's a partnership that worked well when we won the championship, so I think that's probably where Benitez is going to go, and I think this final run will be quite important for Shelvey. He's been missing for quite a lot of the season. Needs some big performances, sort of just to play his way back into the team and into Benitez thinking for the long term, or you know, whoever will be Newcastle manager next year, as there have been plenty of rumours over this past week. But yeah, he needs a good finish to the season just to remind everybody what he can do. And I think he's going to be the one that gets given a lot of the minutes, especially after he came on yesterday and did very well in turning the game. I think he was quite important when the game went down to 2-1, he came on and played very well in those closing stages. Yeah, I think he's the one that I'd quite like to see play there long term.
Interesting. And then also, a lot of times when we have you on, there's a lot of drama happening at Newcastle between the owner and the manager and potential buyouts and all that kind of stuff. It seems to be hitting a lull. Is that just what's happening isn't leaking out into the national media, or do things genuinely seem to have calmed down at the moment?
Yeah, I think it's generally accepted now that Mike Ashley's going to be the owner for the foreseeable future. So we're going to have to see where that takes us. What that means for Benitez, I'm not sure. Plenty of rumours about that. I think there will be talks at the end of the season. I still think he's more likely to stay than not, but obviously it's not certain by any means. And we've been linked to Lyon's manager in this past week in French media. I think it's one that is more his agent trying to push it to try and get a new deal at Lyon, because I think it's coming up. But we've been used as the name in that sort of media story, probably because we've got uncertainty over our manager position, so it makes sense. But it's not really a lot going on, to be honest, that I could talk about. I just think it's going to be more of the same, and it's all about those talks with Benitez at the end of the season and how they go. Could go either way. I'm still quite confident he'll stay, just because I don't really see where else he's going to go. But it's not certain with Mike Ashley as owner, and if he left, I don't think anybody would say he's wrong for leaving, because I think he'd be in his right to say, look, I've done a good job here for 3 years, got you back up to the Premier League, kept you there for 2 years, and now if you're not going to push on with me, I don't want to be manager. And that would be a completely understandable stance to have, but I think he's still quite likes managing the club, and I think he's going to stay, but we'll see. But yeah, I don't think there's going to be any major changes in terms of owners or anything like that, unfortunately.
All right, well, just kind of as you are then over at Newcastle. Thomas, coming to you now to talk a little bit about Liverpool. Today, kind of scrape out a 2-1 win against Fulham. Salah a little bit off the pace at a glance again today. Are you at all concerned about this? Maybe just tired legs? It just doesn't seem like he's been up to his usual terrific self of late.
Yeah, I have to say I'm a bit concerned about him, because it looks like it's got into his head now. Today, he made a few bad decisions, and when it comes to one-on-one against the defenders, it's not the same Salah as last season. When we played United, Luke Shaw looked like the best left back in the league. Today it was Joe Bryan, who looked like a great left back, and it's both times against Mohamed Salah. Last season he made the defenders look like beginners, but this season it's especially after Christmas, it's been a big difference. It doesn't matter too much now, because Sadio Mane is playing at his best for a very long while, but we all know that Mane, he scores in maybe 10-12 games and then doesn't score for a while. And if that happens now, we need Salah back at his best. Of course, he creates chances, and against Bayern Munich, he was very good. And the assist to Mane's second goal was maybe more difficult than most of the goals that he has scored this season. And he was very good in the game for Fulham as well. But today, he looked a bit... I'm concerned about the way that he acted at the field when he got the goal-scoring opportunities. He had a great chance in the end when Mane played him free against the goalkeeper, and then he shot just at the goalkeeper. And the way that he last season, he felt that he could hit the bottom, the corner with no problems at all. And now every time he shoots, it's in the middle of the goal. So I'm a bit worried that that his form can cost us a few points in the league. We need him to be as good as he was last season in the running if we want to compete with Manchester City. And now it looks a bit. Now I'm a bit scared that he won't be there. So I was hoping for him to score today, because last season he scored many goals against the team at the bottom half. Today he should have scored maybe one or two goals, and then we could stop talk about this problem. But for every game that he doesn't score, the problem is gets bigger and bigger. Of course, we win the games, so as long as we win, it's not a huge problem. But we have played a few draws lately, and I don't think we would have done that if Salah would have been in his best shape.
Yeah, fortunately for you, though, Sadio Mane has been stepping up in a big way. Do you view this as just kind of continual development for Mane, or do you think this is just a bit of a purple patch for him?
I think we will see what's happening in the upcoming games, because as I said earlier, he usually have these streaks where he scores for a few games, and then he misses the opportunities for a few game for the next games. Now he has scored 11 goals in the past 11 games, and if he keeps on playing like that, of course, maybe it's a development in his abilities. Because if we saw the first goal against Bayern Munich, was a world-class performance that we haven't seen from him before, in the way that he controlled the ball, he spotted Neuer behind him, he turned around, and he found the goal without making any hasty decisions. So I think that he has developed a bit in his finishing in the past months. I think he looks a bit more relaxed when he gets the goal scoring opportunities. Of course, that's partly because he has scored a few goals. But it will be interesting to see what happens in the upcoming months, because he usually have a month or 2 months in the seasons where he looks like a world-class performer, and then he have five games or six games where he can't hit the goal. So I hope that he will keep on playing like this, because as long as Salah doesn't score, we need him at his best. And I don't think Firmino has been on top of his performances in the past games either. So it's good for us to have Mané in form, and I hope he stays like this at least until May.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting, because I think there are some parallels between Son and Mané, especially when you're saying can be world-class for like 2 months and then just kind of disappear there for a while. But it seems like it's working out for you at the moment, and then maybe Salah will find his footing by the time Mané kind of comes back to earth a little bit. The last thing I wanted to ask you about is, obviously, you beat Bayern after being 0-0 after the first leg. Then you obviously win today. Obviously, any manager is always going to say you're going to be chasing both competitions. But as a fan, would you rather see you push harder to try to win the Premier League title, or to try to see if you can't capture in Europe what you just missed out on last season?
Well, if I have to choose, I would definitely go for the Premier League title, because for me, that's the big thing. I started to support Liverpool in early 90s, so I've never seen them win the Premier League. I have experienced the Champions League title, and I've seen us play in a few finals, but I've never seen a Liverpool player lift the Premier League trophy, and that is what I've been dreaming for since I've started to watch Premier League and Liverpool. So I would definitely go for the Premier League title, but I think that as a player, and as Klopp also, I think that the Champions League title is just as big as the Premier League title. But I think that many of us supporters want to win the title more. And for me, living in Sweden, wanting to win the Premier League title more, I can't even imagine what the supporters living in Liverpool and England feels for the title. So I think from a supporter view, I think the Premier League title is the most important one. But of course, I hope that we have the squad to compete for both.
And getting some bodies back, any word on when Ox will be back now?
From what I've heard, both Oxlade-Chamberlain and Joe Gomez should be ready to play against Spurs after the internationals. So that sounds promising.
Yeah, that'll definitely be a very interesting match for many, many reasons. But we will get to that at some other time. Now we'll move on to Player Watch, where we're just going to discuss who you think was your club's player of the week in your most recent match. We'll start off with you, Thomas, and Wolves.
I think if we're talking about the FA Cup, which I'm sure we are, then I will have to go with João Moutinho. The bloke is just incredible. I mean, what a player. I said to my dad last night, we've got Neves and Moutinho in midfield. Man United had Herrera and Matic either side of Pogba. And, you know, I wouldn't swap Neves and Moutinho for Herrera and Matic. No way. I mean, I just think we've got two better players. I mean, that's crazy to think, but I just think they are that good. And Moutinho in particular has just been fantastic. The longer the season's gone on, the better he's got. I was worried when we signed him at 32 that he may have come for that, you know, big paycheck. But obviously, you know, I should have known better. This is a high caliber international midfielder who's got over 100 caps for Portugal. You know, played in elite competitions. He's not come to make up numbers. He's come because he wants to taste the Premier League and be part of a good side. And he was just phenomenal yesterday in the second half. It's not just his ability to pass and always pick the right option and always keep the ball. It's his tenacity out of possession, how he starts the press, how he closes down and tackles and wins the ball high up the pitch. It's just phenomenal. And if you look at the Jimenez goal, the first goal that got us on the way, he actually beat two or three players. Very uncharacteristic of him to dribble into the box as he did. But that set the tone and he was just fantastic. And with him in the team, you've just always got a chance.
All right. And for Jake, who stood out for you for Newcastle?
Yeah, it's a difficult one. There's a few good performances, but there wasn't anybody that really, really stood out for me. I thought Almiron was good, but probably the best player for me was Salomon Rondon, as he has been for many matches this season. He's just a very, very good striker. Held the ball up very well against Bournemouth. I don't think there's a better striker in the Premier League holding the ball up. And that's probably why he thrives so well in our system, because we do play to his strengths. Just his work rate. He just has a touch of quality as well, as we saw with his goal. I don't think many people expected his free kicks to be that valuable for us this season. I don't think we'd really seen him take them that many in the past, but I think everyone he's taken for us has either hit the post or pulled a great save out of the keeper or gone in as it did on Saturday. So he's obviously got that to his game as well, which wasn't that well known before the season, but he's just very, very good. He's now scored his most goals in the Premier League season. So although we are seen as a defensive team, we're obviously bringing the best out of him, and he's playing some really good football, and I just hope that he stays next season. But from what I'm reading about what our transfer policy is going forward, you know, Newcastle having a transfer policy is ridiculous because we don't really spend any money as it is. But I think Mike Ashley wants to target younger players with a sell on value, as he did at the start of his reign with sort of like Kabay and Sissoko, probably the best examples. So yeah, it looks like Rondon is not going to be signing for us permanently, which is a shame. And I think it could be something that really turns in those talks of Benitez as well, because I know he'll want to sign him permanently. But if we don't, another Premier League club or another club in Europe will be getting a very, very good striker, because I don't think there are many better outside the top six. I think him and Jimenez are the two for me that just stand out in terms of quality outside the top six. So yeah, I think hopefully we get him full time, but yeah, I don't think we will. So somebody else will be getting, like I say, a very, very good striker.
That must be pretty disappointing considering how good he's been for you this year. Pretty easily your leading goal scorer, right?
Yeah, he is. I think Perez has got a few as well now. But yeah, he's obviously been the one scoring the lion's share of the goals. So it's not, I mean, everybody on this podcast knows football, and it's not rocket science that you'd want to sign a player like that, especially if you're a team like Newcastle with a player, given that the player's already at the club, shown he can do well and has interest in signing a permanent contract. But things aren't that simple with Mike Ashley. He seems the pounds and the pennies and the long term, you know, profit value, which there isn't any on Salomon Rondon, unfortunately. So, yeah, shame. But we'll see. Hopefully, Rafa can, if he signs his contract, can get Rondon in as well as part of that, part of his sort of bargaining power. But we'll see how that goes, because I'm not too hopeful of that.
Well, hopefully it does, because every now and again, him and Almiron connect really well and look really dangerous. Finishing up with you, Thomas, with Liverpool. Who stood out for you today for Liverpool?
Well, the game against Fulham today, I don't think there was anybody who was particularly good. Sadio Mane scored a good goal, but apart from that, the players looked quite sloppy, and maybe it was they were mentally tired from the game against Bayern Munich. But the most impressive performance was maybe the way that James Milner scored the penalty, because his first action when he came onto the pitch was to create the opportunity for Fulham that led to the equalizer. Then he had a few passes that was into the against to an opponent. So he hadn't made one thing good before the penalty. So I was sure that he would miss the penalty, but he looked confident when he scored, and that was impressive. Apart from that, I think that most of our players were very happy to grind out 3 points from that game without playing particularly good. The player who impressed me most was a former Liverpool player, actually, because I thought that Ryan Babel looked a lot better now for Fulham than he did when he played for Liverpool a few years ago. So I wasn't surprised that he scored the goal, because he was quite good, and Alexander-Arnold had big problems with him in the first half, and that wasn't Alexander-Arnold's only problem, because he couldn't hit the pitch with his crosses today. He had a very bad game, but from the starting players, none of them were very good. But we won the game, and I guess that's a sign of a good team that we can win even when we don't play well. So it's not easy to play in the Champions League at a big stadium in front of the whole world on a Wednesday, and then go to Fulham, who's almost sure to be relegated, and win. So I guess it's impressive from the team to win, but the players, well, they did what they had to do, but not anything more.
Fair enough, and we will leave it there. So guys, if you'd like to tell the folks where they can find you or anything you're working on, now would be a good time.
I mean, I'm just, as always, keeping up to date everything to do with Wolves at wolvesblog.com, or give us a shout on Twitter at wolvesblog, or on facebook.com/wolvesblog.
Yeah, thanks for listening. You get me on Twitter at jjabwith2ends, and that is where I post anything that I'm involved with. So, yeah, just keep an eye out.
Yeah, thanks for listening. I'm Thomas Nygren. You can find me on Twitter at Thomas Nygren. I write about Liverpool for lfcsv.se. Most of the content is in Swedish, but we usually have a few texts each week in English. I'm also a regular at the Total Liverpool podcast, which also is in Swedish, but if you want to learn Swedish, it's a good way to start.
Yep, absolutely. Go check out all of those three guys' stuff. Thanks again for joining us today. It was a pleasure as always, and we hope you keep listening.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey folks, it's Mark Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president.
You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Mark.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about
coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the full Marin to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts, and subscribe to the full Marin at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.